Welcome, everyone, to Capes and Scowls West. Issue number 10.
Woo!
The big 1-0.
Double digits.
We're all grown up.
talk to me in an hour. I think it'll probably change.
Feels yeah. Grown up.
I need to go right. Home and check on my Furby collection.
I've got my Tamagotchi here in my pocket. Got to make sure it's getting fed.
Oh, no, it's dead again. Reset.
Yeah.
Do you know I had a Pikachu one of those when they like did that first generation of crossovers?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I don't know if it was a Tamagotchi, but it was a total ripoff of Tamagotchi with Nintendo branding, right?
What would that be if like a more major company made an off-brand from like the thing that was an off-brand in the first, like if the Pokemon company made an off-brand of like a Tamagotchi?
Oh. It would probably just be called a Pocket Monster.
Fair yeah, enough.
True. So. Just a good point.
Yeah. Which, it's 2017, I feel like we should have actual Pocket Monsters at this point. Yeah, like little tiny genetically engineered cute monsters that fit in our pockets.
You know what? And we throw them in our pockets and hop on our hoverboard and we can go places.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. What's That's, wrong, man?
What the fuck why have we is done this happening yet? To society?
I don't know. Science. Science, see, this is the problem. This is why there isn't a focus on science, is because cool shit like that hasn't happened.
Yeah.
When cool shit like that happens, everybody can focus on science.
Oh, man, Scoog's hearing his teeth. I want a Pocket Monster.
I had a big philosophical discussion with my roommate about how having philosophical discussions just holds me back from having rocket shoes. If there were less people sitting on a stump philosophizing about what the meaning of life is, I'd probably have rocket shoes at this point.
True. That's a good point.
Yeah.
And if we don't, I guess at this point, even if we don't actually, so we should have Pocket Monsters at the very least in a virtual sense. Like, I should walk around in my virtual world, which is also the real world, right. And augmented reality, and just throw around my Pocket Monster.
Yeah, that's true.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
I feel like we're on the cusp of this VR world, right?
VR.
So hilariously enough, like, they know they're doing the Pokemon stuff, and they know they're trying to do Yu-Gi-Oh! Stuff now, too.
Oh, are they really? Yeah. I would totally
that
Yu-Gi-Oh!
That would be pretty cool. I never was a fan of it, but I feel like in AR, it would be really cool.
You get to play your card and throw it down.
Yeah.
You've activated my trap card!
Wow.
That's all I want to do. Yeah.
Spiky hair.
Yeah, when you look at the other play.
I do want to look like an anime character. Like, I'd be totally okay with that.
I don't
know,
their hair is pretty dead.
It'll be like when you look at the other player, like, through your phone, like, it'll automatically, like, give them, like, crazy hair. Like, one of those, like, camera filters.
Okay, that's really cool. Like, it's augmented reality.
I'm full-on visor ready. Like,
Or
eyeballs. Just give me new eyeballs. I don't need my eyes.
Yeah,
like, you know what? I'm
like, have eyeballs, like, half the size of your head.
I accidentally looked at the eclipse, like, for half a second. So I feel like it's already burnt, so just give me some new ones.
It's all downhill from here.
This sun's so pretty.
Aww. Aww. Look at the sun.
Look at the sun.
Why am I burning?
Why does it hurt?
My eyes hurt. It's pretty bad when one of my friends is telling me, oh yeah, she didn't want to teach her 2-year-old to look at the sun, and you're over here looking at the sun.
Okay, I didn't look at it. Here's what happened. Here's the idiotic thing that happened. I had the special glasses, right? So it was my first time trying them. The eclipse was happening. I look at the eclipse with my glasses on, right?
Right.
I'm looking at it. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. And I take them off and I go to turn. And as like I take it off, I'm looking right into it.
It's so, okay. I mean, the president looked at it.
That's true. So it's okay for me to do it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So
anyway,
so moving on.
Instantly, a mood
I heard
killer.
We had great news. What's the news that we actually have? Oh, great news! I gotta be careful. I heard we have news.
Real news.
It doesn't have to be.
Yeah, I've got some funny news. I've got some good news.
Let's start with some funny news.
Yeah, let's
funny.
So, one of the directors from the Netflix Death Note movie has deleted his Twitter account for harassment.
I heard that.
Is it Adam Wingard? Like the actual director? That's bad.
But the thing is part of me doesn't feel so sorry because this is what started it all. Sorry, trolls, but the artist wins in the long run. No. There's more, though. We love how many people feel personally attacked by this tweet. And of course, it has the little capture of the tweet. It's like troll bait. Those that bite expose themselves. But wait, there's more. Film criticism is different than bitching at filmmakers on Twitter. Still not done. Are you talking to me or all 23 of your followers? Now I'm done.
Wow.
So in the back of my head, I'm like, nah, I don't feel sorry.
You know what we need to look for in the next coming weeks is an announcement that there's a new director on King Kong versus Godzilla. Because he is right now attached to that.
Is he supposed to be?
Comments like that after such a monumental failure that was the Death Note movie that... the precedent is set in Hollywood, and we'll talk about this fairly soon, that if your shit ain't doing well and the movie's not in active production, you're out.
Well, he kind of, personally, I'm like, you're an asshole. Like, I don't even, like, the fact that, I didn't like it, whatever, but seriously, you can't even be, like...
Keep your mouth shut.
He's like, this is troll bait. And I'm like, you're being a troll right now.
This was like the James Cameron thing a few weeks ago with the Wonder Woman comments. Mm-hmm. It's like, when do you just shut your mouth?
Yeah. I will give him that he is right in that criticizing a movie on Twitter is different than film criticism. But I also wouldn't be surprised. Twitter isn't really the best forum for a full drawn out film criticism. It's hard to pack cinematography into 150 characters. That word alone eats up about a third of your characters.
Just like reading all of these tweets from him, I'm like, I don't even feel sorry for you. You're just being a complete ass. About something that I'm sorry no one liked. My bad.
Yeah,
okay, I've heard there's some people who like it, and I don't talk to those people. But, but at the same time, it was like...
I could see how if you've never been exposed to Death Note before in any caliber, you would find that film enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't
the acting
finish
was
it.
Good. The cinematography was actually pretty good. I gotta give him props on that. Like, it was well-directed. The acting was really good. Not in character at all for any of those characters, but they still did a good job for the script. However, if you have any notion of the series or in any extent...
Every person I've talked to who's read it has just hated it.
And I'm okay with what you just said, Patrick. There is an issue, though. Like, don't even do Death Note. Like, do another movie that is about something similar, and then those characters can act however they want to act. But if you're basing it on the book... And the reason the book was popular is because these characters are amazing. Mm. Why the hell would you take these characters and say, oh, never mind. I don't really care what the book says. I'm going to do what I want. Like, don't even do Death Note. Do something else.
I'm going to comment on that, too, because there's a lot of early rumblings from, well, Inhumans. Because the first two episodes were released as an IMAX film for some sort of whatever studio shot
thing. Actually.
Oh, okay, so maybe we can just jump into this.
Sure. Yeah.
But you're talking about why are you making a product when you're going to change that much of it?
Mm-hmm.
If your premise for Inhumans involves shaving Medusa's head, maybe you shouldn't be making Inhumans.
Wait, what?
And the first two episodes, and this, I'm sorry, we're in spoiler territory, this is all over the internet at this point.
Sure.
In that IMAX screening, one of the things that happens is they shave Medusa's head. So why are you making the Inhumans if this is your in the first two episodes of the series, no less.
Yeah, right. So she doesn't even get to use her powers?
I guess she uses it in like episode one.
All right, but here's the thing. I'm okay with that.
Why?
Because it's a really interesting, like, it hasn't happened in the comics yet.
It has.
It has, okay. So, but either way, I think it's a really cool, like, mentally, I'm like, oh, that's really cool, they're shaving her head. Like, that's a big part of her power. She is that.
Right.
And she's such a badass. So, what would she be like, depowered? But you're right, it's so early on.
But you need to earn that.
Yeah,
like, that's something you do episode 10, the season finale of the series.
I agree.
You don't start your premise with that because you don't have the budget to do her hair properly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unless they plan to make it, like, a darker version.
I get what he's saying, though, about, you know, how am I supposed to understand how mind-blowing this is to this character when I don't understand her.
Yeah,
especially as a person who, one, doesn't ever deal with Inhumans, and now you're showing me the show about it, and it's like, oh, they shaved her head. Well, I don't understand how that's so...
Why is that significant?
Like, they're just... I mean, it's part of me feels like it's more of a blowing to like the comic book nerds,
almost
but
too much.
Yeah, but it's too much though. So how am I, someone who's never read it, supposed to get into it if I don't understand?
The comic nerds want to see her hair do crazy things, mm-hmm. and like, you know.
But that's one of the main criticisms of the show in general from the studios is that for the budget it has, it's very sloppy.
Yeah.
That's ABC's, so the big thing I have was before it even came out, IMAX was really tentative about it because they were like, it's not like it's been getting a lot of flack and like from what we understand mm-hmm. about it, it's not really that good even though we're putting all this money into it. I think it made like 3 million or 4 million. 3 to 5 million, somewhere in that range, as a premiere, which is not that much as an IMAX box office
right.
thing.
When IMAX and, tickets are like $15 plus.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So they put a lot of resources into showing it a really subpar product, and now ABC Studios is actually really tentative about it as well because of the poor CGI. And so it's pretty funny that it comes secondly. They're like, it has really bad CGI. This is what the execs are saying. They're like, it has really poor CGI. And the scripts are really sloppy. And I was like, maybe reverse the order of importance on that because, like...
But you have to remember, like, though, like, looking at anything anymore, like, in all reality, if something's not well written... It can still be amazing. Fast and Furious 8, Michael. Like, I just want you to remember, on that note, that's why it sits the way it does.
I mean, I guess that's true. We could always, you know, say Avatar. Like, if you took out the multi-millions of dollars they put into CGI, it's a pretty crappy script and story.
Yeah, the CGI gets you there.
Yeah, so that's true.
That's kind of the thing that I always want to remind people. That's why they said it the way that, oh, there's crappy CGI. Oh, and the script's not that great.
Yeah, but I think
because it always comes first.
If that's you're especially true. launching a new property that is part of a larger cinematic universe, the script should have come first.
Mm-hmm.
In something like that where... The script will drive the effects budget because if the story is the right story that they're going to tell, then the budget should be based on what they want to do in that story. So the effects should follow what the story needs.
Mm-hmm.
And another problem that I'm hearing about this series is that it doesn't take place on the moon. So once again, where did your budget go if you're cutting Medusa's hair and you're taking the story and putting it on Earth?
Mm-hmm. I think it all went into Lockjaw.
Okay.
Because I mean, honestly, this goes for any series, though, is like when they, like, in all reality, if it's not a huge hit, like, if they're, I've always seen things where it's like, if it's not a huge hit, when it's like, not had that much money put into it, and then it gets huge, and then they get all their money, and now it feels like, this is gonna be a huge hit, dump all this money into it,
Well, but think about, like, I don't know, like, you're talking, like, the, like, Neon Genesis effect. The show had a $0 budget, and now it has, like, multi-millions of dollars to make the reboot movies, because, and you see it, like, if you ever go to Japan, you'll see billboards with Unit 1 holding, like, a can of shaving cream and stuff like that.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
I need to go to Japan.
And, and stuff like that, and there's a lot of other things, like, Legion started out with a pretty relatively low budget. And they spent it mostly on Aubrey Plaza. But, like, towards the end of the season, you can tell, like, not only did the cinematography, but the special effects just dramatically increase, like, exponentially over the course of the first season.
And that would probably be a product of the writing being so good in the first few episodes that you're allowed to.
Exactly.
You start to see where it's going. I don't know. I think with the Inhumans, too, we're dealing with a weird case of... being part of an overarching conglomerate. Like, it's a big thing. All of the Netflix TV shows, you have the films, and you also have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah. So you're dealing with it supposed to be part of this interconnected universe. Yes, you should be throwing money at this, but clearly the scripts, from what we're hearing, because it hasn't actually aired on ABC yet, but all signs are pointing to the scripts just being absolute garbage. So... Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When does it come out?
I don't know when it's actually supposed to. I think it's at the end of this month.
It's relatively soon, because I know it was only like a couple weeks before the actual air date.
Okay.
I mean, I can't say... Bad cat. Can't say I'm going to watch it, just because I've never, like... X-Men, mm-hmm. And I like wander away.
I'll watch it just because I feel like I should watch it, but I'm already going to go into it with low expectations,
right.
Which means I might come back and be like, oh my gosh, it blew my expectations away because the bar was set at literally zero and it was a one.
He was like, it was negative two.
Yeah.
It's
a zero.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, my bar is at negative two and it was a full zero.
Well, I guess we'll see and what happens then.
Yeah, so it's apparently supposed to come out September 29th. So yeah, at the end of this month.
I'll be too busy packing, so that'll be my excuse.
That'll be your excuse.
That's why I didn't
see
it.
I don't sleep. Yeah. I'll be busy sleeping or sleeping.
I'll be staring at the calendar for the release of Blade Runner and then Stranger Things at the end of the month.
I'll just watch it and then come to all of you and give you like a much better 5-minute like one man show the first episode. I'll be like, and then Black Bolt's like, and then, like, locked up, then, like, yeah.
Sounds all right.
Wow. All
right, who's up next for news?
So, ABC Studios, by the way, if you want to hire me for a one-man production of Inhumans,
it could be a thing.
Just
it
call me.
He's like, I work off of rent.
Yes.
Yeah, you don't have to pay me multiple millions of dollars to produce it.
That's awesome.
Okay, what other news?
Well, so, recently announced the director Colin Trevorrow was removed from Star Wars Episode 9. And officially, J.J. Abrams has now signed on to co-write and direct, and they've shifted the release date to, I believe, December 20th, 2019.
Yeah, why did they remove him? I don't remember.
Apparently, the script and was not what they were thinking, and he was clashing with Kathleen Kennedy. Mm-hmm. Which is weird because they had a previous relationship. Like, they were friends outside of the working environment. So apparently they just couldn't work together.
That happens. You can't work with your friends.
So I don't know how I feel about J.J. Abrams.
He directed the seventh one.
He directed seven.
Right.
And J.J. Abrams' big thing is he's really good at starting a story and not great at ending one. So...
It's not a good review.
Star Trek...
I've seen the first one. That's it.
Which one? Which one was that?
The reboot
was
slash
that Khan.
No,
or the one with Idris Elba.
No, neither one of those.
Neither. Oh, the first one.
The first one.
Okay,
yeah.
Of the trilogy.
So he did that film and was a really great intro into this new version of Star Trek they were doing, and then he did Into Darkness, which is the one with Khan, and it's not bad.
I like that one more than the first one.
What?
Yeah,
that's crazy.
And I'm a Star Trek, and I'm a Star Trek fan. I liked Khan a lot, and so I thought they did a really good job. I thought Benedict Cumberbatch killed it.
I didn't care. Nah. I didn't.
Although I'm kind of a weird Trek fan. Like when when Spock died, I was like meh. But then like when the Enterprise is burning up in the atmosphere, I was like no, the Enterprise. Spock's gonna be fine. Yeah, but like their ship, there's gonna be only one Enterprise. And I have to go to B.
So I think the big concern is that Abrams is going to parallel too much.
Like he did in the seventh one?
Which, I mean, I'm a huge seven, I think, for me, is like my third favorite of all of the Star Wars films.
I'm pretty sure I rewatched, like, what was it, Empire Strike Back? I mean, I'm not, like, I'm kind of ragging on it, but it's just, I don't know. It puts stuff in space, and I'm unhappy.
Yeah. That's so weird.
Yeah.
J.J. Abrams in space!
Suddenly she doesn't like him.
So it could be a mediocre movie is what we're saying.
It seems like a safe choice.
It's too safe.
But I'm also hearing that Rian Johnson turned the position down. So
this thing's a hot mess. This whole thing's a hot mess.
Yeah, Star Wars is... I'm sure the movies will be fantastic.
I want to see Episode 8. I still haven't seen Rogue One.
I just watched it last week, actually.
I liked it.
I love Rogue One.
I loved it.
I don't know. Like, I want to see 8, but, like, it just... now I'm scared.
8, I have no worry about at all. Rian Johnson... There's been nothing negative about that production, mm-hmm. and his previous film track record is outstanding. So, and it's gonna, his previous films are dark, so it'll be interesting to see what happens in the Star Wars universe.
I'm already in.
Yeah. Have you seen Looper? Mm-mm. Okay, yeah, see Looper.
Wait.
Looper's amazing. Time no, travel.
I would be happy. Would you just time travel with Looper Duper?
It's a super Looper Duper.
Yep.
So close right. to hear a crash. That's me trying to jump out a window.
So the other thing that comes with this, though, is the push to December is 1 week after the release of Wonder Woman 2.
Mm-hmm.
What?
There's a lot of clashes here because I have, as a bit of news that to kind of move into this, is that the new Hellboy movie just got a release date, and it is January 11th of 2019, so this is about 2 weeks after...
They're all 2019.
They're all 2019, yeah, so it'll be the beginning early of the year.
Yeah, so December
13th. Oh, sorry, I got my years mixed up. Okay, yeah. So never mind. They're gonna be a full year.
Yeah. They'll be okay.
I should not be interested in time travel devices.
No one should.
The thing is like, it's, I don't know, like, if I had to pick between Wonder Woman and Star Wars, I think I might pick Wonder Woman because it's set in the 80s, which I love the 80s to begin with, and then you're putting Wonder Woman in the 80s. I'm just like,
I'm going Wonder Woman over Star Wars.
I'm pretty sure I can't
tell you how much I'm not excited for a Wonder Woman film set in the 80s.
Why?
No. I'm there with you, actually.
I would rather you've told us the past story. The continuity indicates that she left man's world until the events of Batman v Superman. Give me Wonder Woman now. What does she see in our current society?
I don't think she ever went back to Themyscira, and that's the point that they're making.
She says that she hasn't been part of man's world for 100 years.
That could mean that could mean a million things.
Mm-hmm.
So what is she doing then? Are we going to watch Wonder Woman in the 80s eating ice cream and listening to
pop music? I'll watch Gal Gadot eat ice cream.
Yeah.
Trust me, I want this movie to be good. I'm glad Patty Jenkins is back.
Huge.
I don't think the 80s, and I'm hearing that Chris Pine is supposed to come back too. So
how?
Exactly. So what story are you telling?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, I mean, it could be a million things though.
Yeah.
And she can't go back to Themyscira anyway. She was already exiled, so she has to be part of man's world.
She's just. Well, I think it's more like she hid in man's world, is what it seems to me.
Right.
Personally, like, you run into her in the beginning of the movie. She's in a museum.
Right.
Well, that's, I don't think, say, going back to Themyscira, just not being involved in man's world. So how does a character like Wonder Woman, and what event is she going to be a part of that is so insignificant that she's not part of man's world, in quotes, for that time frame? Like, what story are you telling?
Maybe we're going to play Atomic Blonde world, and she's just, like, doing stuff that's not a part of the Cold War, but during the Cold War.
I guess, but is that the movie you want to see?
I want to see Wonder Woman. I don't care.
Trust me, Wonder Woman is my favorite film of 2017.
Like, you know, Charlize Theron beat the crap out of dudes. I'm like up for anything.
what I'm totally mad about is I'm over this whole 80s trend. Like, I get the 30-year cycle of nostalgia. Like. Yeah. Like, every decade has nostalgia for 30 years ago.
Like 10 years of and 90s nostalgia.
Yep, it's
going to
be
90s
run,
nostalgia. Everybody run.
Nope, it's already starting. You can see that stuff.
I've heard boy bands more than I want to.
Yeah, and so, like, I'm just over the 80s stuff. There's certain 80s things I love, like, definitely Cough Ready Player One, Cough. But
Stranger Things,
definitely.
Yeah, right,
but, like... Paper Girls, but
Paper
like it's just too much.
Like, really,
it's just too much. There's too much 80s stuff. It's just all over the place. Like, we get it. It's people liked the 80s and grew up then sometimes, and there was like weird hair and jumpsuits and cocaine. Like, I get it. It was the 80s. It happened, and I'm gonna be saying this
very much in like the normal mainstream things because I'm over here. I'm like, I haven't had enough.
I think I don't see enough of it myself. Like, I mean,
I just recently saw It, and that takes place firmly in 1988.
I never saw It. I don't read Paper Girls. I don't know. Maybe I don't have enough anymore.
Yeah, I'm over here. I'm like, Atomic Blonde!
Yeah, well, I mean, and you hear, like, all the especially electronic music, like, now, like, having throwbacks to 80s, mm-hmm. like, electro, mm-hmm. pop, and, true. Like, all this stuff.
Teen Titans, number one song, hit top of the charts, like, now, in real life is B.E.R., Night Begins to Shine.
Yeah.
It's number one on the music charts.
Well, and we talked...
And it's an 80s song.
Yeah. We talked a couple weeks ago about the potential Joker film, which, once again, supposed to be set in the 80s. So, to me, it's an oversaturation.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I want to see a Wonder Woman film. I want to see her in our current world, especially to parallel Man of Steel.
Mm-hmm.
And see what that world actually looks like now. Plus, we haven't seen Justice League, so we don't know where that puts her. What sort of situation does Justice League put Wonder Woman in our current world? Because it looks like that mascara may get destroyed in Justice League. There gives me a storyline that you could tell me that I want to be a part of, is how does Wonder Woman exist in our world?
Because nothing ever changes in film production.
Right?
This is going back to, like, we talked a couple podcasts ago about the Flashpoint when that was announced as the title. Yeah. So I think they're just going to Flashpoint everything, and Wonder Woman being in the 80s is just Flashpointed, and Themyscira being destroyed. They might even do it at the end of the Justice League movie. Like, Flash is just like, I'm going to run super fast and make the world better.
Right.
Superman, he's going to run back in time as Superman spins the planet back around. And then,
my prediction for a long time has been, especially the way that they're portraying Flash in the trailers, is that he is going to try to undo his creation, his getting of powers, because he doesn't view himself as a hero. And accidentally create the Flashpoint and fix these things.
That makes sense too.
So that it's not that he doesn't think that the world should exist the way it is or that bad things happened. He just doesn't feel like he should be a hero. So he tries to undo the tragedy of his life that turns into Flash.
I will add one more perspective though about the
Wonder Woman. On the
Wonder Woman issue. It's that Wonder Woman is not part of daily life. Like, Batman and Superman have gone through the entire ages, and they've been allowed to be that. They're allowed to be men that have gone through those entire ages, and now they can be present. Wonder Woman, if we do one right now, Wonder Woman will be forgotten in a couple years. She needs a foundation. She needs to be a part of our culture. She doesn't need to just get thrown into stuff. And so
even in the comics, you're right, because everything in her, like, even through the comics, though, you have to think, she changed with the times. Like, there was a point I remember where people are like, oh, Wonder Woman's, like, whoever took over Wonder Woman, because I remember reading about this when the movie was coming out, is she's too much of a sexual object for boys, we need to change her, and they changed her completely. She could never be the same, I hate using this term, feminist icon that she's always been, even in the comics. So giving her that role in the 80s of being who she is in the 80s, I
kind of want to
watch that again.
Me too. I want
to
see it.
So then pitch to me where she is as a feminist icon but isn't hidden. That is the problem I have. If the story that they have set up right now, she would be hidden, which then degrades the character. She needs to be part and public of the world. She needs to be an ambassador. That is the best part of her character, is the fact that she is an ambassador for Themyscira, therefore an ambassador for truth, for honesty, for love. These things are part of her character, but she needs to be a public presence.
But maybe in the 80s she doesn't have to be a public presence. Maybe she's really brand new to this whole man, right, situation. And I don't mean man in like literal gender man, but like our world situation. She hasn't seen what we can, like, how horrible we are.
Right.
And so she's going to, in the 80s, she's going to see some shit and be like, I can't not do something. I can't not do all this, like, the gang wars and the drugs and
everything. The Wall Street.
And someone's probably in her life going to get killed.
But she's been in man's world for 40 years by that point. So she's seeing it as it's happening. It's not like, well, because she is in the 80s. Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm excited. We'll see what happens.
Trust me.
I'm just giving that perspective of she hasn't had any time in the limelight. because our world was too sexist to allow Wonder Woman to be a movie.
Right.
Or to be even a TV. She was a TV show, but even then.
My counterpoint to that is, if you want her to be in the limelight and be something special, make it so that audiences now can't ignore it. It's the times. The times that we are in right now. Because you did the past movie already. You set her up as being something that was a figure in a brutal and violent war.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, though, of all the potential, because of what Patrick said, of all the potential time periods, the 80s will be the one that everyone connects with. You know, whereas World War One, I get it. I know what happened.
But people are fat and they blew each other up.
Exactly. But 80s, I actually know, like, it's not that far away that I can't remember it.
$800 million says people connected pretty well with going into that movie theater to see that film. So,
I mean, considering that they have another co-writer for it, too, I'm like, how many co-writers does one script need that I don't...
It's most of the time with the superhero genre, the reason that they have so many co-writers is because they have to have the connecting points. Mm-hmm. So you have to have people who can filter in those pieces of the other stories.
Well, it's the highest grossing, no surprise here, because in all reality, everything else is awful. DCU film, ever. Mm-hmm. It's the highest grossing live action movie ever by a female director, and then top earning superhero origin film, and of course, the summer's highest grossing film. So it's got a lot to live up to.
Oh, woo! Yeah. I don't think it will have a problem living up to that. Yeah. I think it's going to be amazing.
I still think Pete Jenkins is going to kick it.
She's crushing it.
Just change the setting. Don't do the 80s.
Yeah. Do like the 70s.
I'm
Give
okay
Wonder
with
Woman
this.
Bell bottoms instead of
No. No, we don't want to do that. That was tried in the comic books and it was not a good decision.
Yeah. So. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Let's move on.
Moving on.
Next news.
Yeah. I've got one
quick thing and then one other thing that I want to talk about, but I don't really know how much I'm going to get back from it. But so Your Name comes to Blu-ray on November 7th. Thank you, Amazon.
Yes,
I was like looking around on Amazon. I was like,
So good. This is
the most beautiful love story I've ever seen.
Your Name. It's
Your Name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's an anime film. It was like such a breakout success.
I can guess like the plot twist in every movie. That one, it was like I was like,
I didn't even know.
don't spoil things.
I'm just telling you, you're gonna get like smacked across the face. You're just like,
and a lot of times you can see that it's building up to a twist too. And in this, it happens, and you're just like, what? Jesus Christ!
That's basically what it was.
And
you're like, oh.
And the main character is there, like, what the hell? Jesus Christ. And you're like, I know, right?
You're like going through the same thing with them. You're like, wait, what? And they're like, wait, what?
Yeah. But it's a beautiful film. Like, it was such a breakout, too. Like, it kind of just came out with, like, regular things.
Thing is,
and then, like, a month after it came out, it's already in American theaters. Like, mainstream
The most insane part to it, too, is there's the like, stair scene.
Yeah.
There's a place in Japan... That there's a place in Japan that it was modeled after, and there's so many people who now go visit that and take pictures there.
No, the province and the province that I'm forgetting her name, but the female lead in it.
I can't
there's a specific province and temple in Japan, and they've seen like an uptick in tourism there, like 50% or something like that.
It's an amazing movie. Like,
so then what's the news then? Just to make sure.
Yeah. So that's the thing. I just wanted us all to get excited for that movie because I will be buying it. Because everybody
what's the release date again?
November 7th.
Okay. November 7th. Okay.
I don't know if I can hold out that long.
It finally got a release date.
Yeah, it did.
Oh, and so this is the movie coming to theaters?
Blu-ray.
It's coming
Blu-ray. Okay.
Theatrical release was this summer, right?
It was about a week long, at least here in Fort Collins in the Cinemark.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 2 weeks. I actually, made sure, sleep deprived as I was, I'm like, I'm seeing this movie.
I talked to you about it, the day of seeing it, actually. I was like, oh my god, last night I just watched this film, Your Name, and you're like, oh my god, literally today I'm gonna go watch Your Name.
And Patrick's like, you're gonna love it. And I literally texted him afterwards, like, you are so right!
I know.
I'm excited.
So
that should be really good, though.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
we should have a movie party.
We should have a
viewing
party
at Griffin's.
Speaking of,
we might actually. Well, I don't think we can do that.
Week, speaking of viewing parties of stuff, and stuff in theaters, anime style, I know Nausicaa is coming to theaters this month. I believe the 23rd through the 25th.
Shut up.
It's, yeah, so entirely this year they're doing a different Ghibli film in theaters.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And this month is Nausicaa.
Where? Where can I see Nausicaa?
I believe it's the Cinemark.
Really?
So it's major. It's I forget. It's a bunch of major movie chains, I believe.
It's Miyazaki's first film.
Yeah. Okay. No, actually. It's his first...
big film?
Lupin the Third: Castle Cagliostro is technically his first feature length film. Mm-hmm. This is his first only for theaters film.
Gotcha.
So
we're IMDb and this stuff right now.
You're looking to buy tickets.
Yeah, but no, it's okay. It's amazing.
That's really cool.
Yeah,
I'll go watch it then since I haven't seen it yet.
Well, so the other fun fact is Sword Art Online Ordinal Scale, which I still haven't seen because no one will give me a Blu-ray. Anyways. They have the DVD rental out in Japan, and it has a couple interesting things in it. I guess the first one, like the first thing I read, and of course that's like the norm thing, but apparently there's a bit more of an ooh-la-la scene that is not safe for work with Asuka involving like a bathtub. So that's legit, I guess.
Okay, that's fair.
And then, but the most important part to it is there's a teaser promo for the new story arc for Sword Art Online, so... all that really tells me, because I like Sword Art Online, and I know that I get in arguments over people with this, but is they are doing, hopefully that means that it's in the new future for me.
Yeah, I actually just read an article about this last night, actually, before I came in here. And so, yeah, there's a new, like, after the film originally was released, there was a teaser with just, like, a black screen and, like, people talking over it, and they're like, oh my gosh, like...
yep.
This stuff is happening, and then, and people were like, oh my gosh, it could be, like, a cliffhanger, and then the DVD / Blu-ray was released, and there was, like, a thing before
that. I think Japan's
really
big on DVD still. I don't think they actually do Blu-ray, and that's why stuff gets so expensive when you put it on Blu-ray for anime.
But, yeah, so it was released, and then, like, before the movie started, there was this for sure thing that was like, no, there will definitely be a new thing happening, and everyone's like, oh my god, what is it gonna be? Because, like, they're like... we don't know what it's going to be. Is it going to be another movie, another series, another manga, another video game? And then everyone's like, well, it's got to be season 3, right? And then they're like, well, I don't know. We'll find out in October when we have, like, a panel discussion about it.
Well, I have, like, there's, like, 9 books in English and, like, 17 altogether if you can read Japanese, which I really wish I could at this point.
It would be nice.
And so they would be on... book 9 right now. Is that what they're doing? It's like Alakazation arc, which I haven't read yet. I'm only on like book 3 because there's, you know, 9 of them I have to get through.
I just want to officially relent to Patrick's knowledge. Lupin the Third came out in 1979 and Nausicaa was 1984.
You know what? I would say I told you so.
Either.
But, you know, you just... I don't even know why you tried on that one.
How dare you even question.
He's just awesome. Like, winning.
I have the Nausicaa manga, so I'm very, like...
That's fair.
Yeah,
I'm, like, ready to, like, tip over stuff. I'm like, next year I get, you know, the last season of Fairy Tale, and now they're talking about new Sword Art Online, and then, of course, you know, last season of Fairy Tale, I'm not sure what I'm going to do with my life after that, but...
what? You guys don't know Fairy Tale?
No, I know Fairy Tale. I was shrugging at Nat.
I was like, there are two tattoos on me right now that are disappointed.
That's awesome.
The tattoos are disappointed. That's amazing.
Yep.
All right, what else do we have for news?
I think I started to mention the Hellboy, and then we got
sidetracked, and then we started arguing.
Yeah, we got distracted with like 5 minutes of Wonder Woman talk. So release date January 11th, 2019. It will be directed by Neil Marshall, who is responsible for The Descent and a lot of other horror movies, actually. So it'll be really interesting to see, which The Descent was, I'm not a big horror fan, but it was an amazing film. Like,
that's all I've ever heard. I don't watch horror movies because
it's terrifying, but like the whole like setting an entire movie in basically a cave is like a real like cinematic like experience. Like, yeah. there's some amazing scenes.
A horror manga, and horror, anything else that's not on the screen besides anime.
Huh. Yeah. And then, so we got got David Harbour as Hellboy, who mm-hmm. is the sheriff from Stranger Things, amongst mm-hmm. other things.
That's right. Yep.
As well as Ian McShane. And I didn't know this before, but Mila Jovovich is actually going to be in it as well. Yes.
And then they just announced Daniel Day Kim.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The character that, oh, man, somebody just left the role because he was concerned about the whitewashing. And so Daniel Day Kim has now stepped in and to fulfill that role of a Japanese American character.
Oh.
Hmm. That's a really big deal right now, too, so that would be the last thing you want to set foot in.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, definitely.
That was smart. I mean, they actually went and got an Asian American.
Mm-hmm.
I believe he's Korean, though, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's like, at this point in America, I feel like you can find a very skilled and talented actor of just about any race or ethnicity to play any role. So like I like the whitewashing thing is totally mm-hmm. unnecessary when you can find somebody of equal caliber to play that role.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
We might get into an argument if we don't move on.
One of the major news of Hellboy though is that they've released the first photo of David Harbour as Hellboy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So what does everybody think about that?
I mean, he looks good. That's all I'm saying.
Everybody's
more excited about this movie than they are Cable, so it just makes me chuckle to myself because they've released how many photos of him looking like Cable and no one seems to care.
Oh, I care. I think it looks awesome, but I love Hellboy. The comics were, I'm a huge fan of Mike Mignola's art. I watched Atlantis for the first time because I realized that they had based the art style around Mignola's art. So, yeah.
Wait, like the Disney movie Atlantis?
Yes. He was actually
That movie's awesome.
That movie's awesome, and he's a production designer on the film. They finally brought it in. Man,
every time I try to watch that movie, I like fall asleep because, of course, I'm like extremely exhausted for some reason.
Oh.
Every time they're like, you gotta watch it, and I'm like watching it, and I'm like...
There's so many like ridiculously famous people in that movie, though, as voice actors.
Yeah.
Like, Leonard Nimoy's in that movie. I didn't realize
until
view, and like...
he's the king of Atlantis.
Yeah. And
I don't know. Atlantis doesn't excite me at all. So just
really
just the concept, everything about it, I'm like, whatever.
Nah, this
is a sunken city, I get it, whatever.
This is amazing. It's like an alt culture and stuff. Yeah,
it's not what the movie's really about.
I'm just saying,
it's like the sunken city. You know, it's about colonialism.
Alright.
Basically.
I mean, you're trying to sell it, but it's still Atlantis.
The major selling point.
Europeans trying to come in and
I'll let you guys argue this out.
Been there, done that. I've seen it.
Can I catch up on my anime real quick? You guys tell me.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm a Disney fan. This seems wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have, like, this very odd... Like, I'm a very nostalgic classics. Like, I love the ones from the 50s. And you start hitting closer to 2000s, and that's when everything starts to tap off for me.
Mm-hmm. I have two words for you. Lilo, Stitch.
See, everybody, like, that movie's great, and it's hilarious, and it's funny. I don't care about it. Like, I do, but I don't. Like, it's there. It's pretty much, like, I'll watch it if it's on, but... I'm not gonna like.
We need to do an animation discussion special because I'm freaking out right now.
We really did. I'm with you on this one, Matt, and I'm like, oh gosh, like the like Disney's. I mean, their classics are good. Don't get me wrong, they're classics and whatnot. It's obviously why they're called classics.
I don't know, Beauty and the Beast. That is not the one I meant. Sleeping Beauty, I think, is the like most beautiful one, and I know he's gonna argue with me, but I find that one.
No. Sleeping Beauty is probably the best conceptual and production design of an animated film, but the renaissance of Disney exists with Little Mermaid, Lion King, Beauty and the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
So that is your core. Aladdin. Mm-hmm. That is the best of Disney's animated films, and we're not talking about Hellboy anymore.
We went from Hellboy to Disney.
We did.
Yay!
So is this like the new 6 degrees? Is the 6 degrees to Disney?
Yeah. Apparently. Easily. Once Cat gets in the mix.
Yeah, right. That's my life. It's either anime, Disney, or superheroes.
So I actually have a bit of comic book news. I know that's a strange idea.
Whoa.
So Marvel has been releasing some solicits for the Legacy event, and there's a comic book called Marvel 2-in-1. It's going to be written by Chip Zdarsky with art by Jim Chung. And it is Thing and the Human Torch searching for the Richards family.
Oh my gosh, I want it.
So are we actually seeing Marvel moving forward on a potential Fantastic Four relaunch?
Maybe.
Are we actually heading towards a Marvel again with the Fantastic Four? I mean, I'm hoping for it.
I want it in my life. I love Fantastic Four.
That creative team, though, Zdarsky and Chung, holy shit, I'm all over that. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's a good team.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm ready.
When is that happening? Did we know?
That's part of the Legacy event. I don't think it launches until November.
All right.
But
I'm kind of excited for that just because I know my girl Moon Girl is somehow going to be involved with the Thing and the Human Torch. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's like they, you know, ask her for help or something, finding him. They're like, you're the smartest person in the world. Help us find the second smartest person in the world.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. You know,
oh, my God. I just had the vision of seeing Jim Chung's drawing of the devil dinosaur.
Oh, that would be awesome.
God, that's going to be beautiful.
I'm excited about that.
I mean, I'm just excited at the fact that they're still doing Scooby-Doo Apocalypse because
they're freaky. Save that for the 0.5 issue. I got beef with that.
Any more news? And there were reviews.
I have a quick fun one before we get into
news. Do the fun one.
Fun / controversial. Apparently, San Diego Comic-Con is suing Salt Lake City Comic-Con over the use of the term Comic-Con.
Stop it.
Yes.
So they're going to sue Denver, they're going to sue Anaheim, they're going to sue...
Salt Lake City was just using the term Comic-Con, I guess, as a solicit for their con, and it's something about... I didn't actually look at the two logos, but apparently there's some battle there over the similarities and logos to each other, and San Diego Comic-Con's whole argument is that calling it just Comic-Con is taking away from their traffic and ticket sales and all this stuff.
Does it go on at the same time? You're
right. Is it the same
It
month?
Doesn't
is
go on at the same time, season? But apparently a lot of people were confused because you just look up Comic-Con and Salt Lake City was doing this, so there was like this big confusion there.
Yeah,
and then Salt Lake City's lawyers are arguing that the term Comic... They thought the term Comic-Con was pretty universal.
It is.
Which I did too. But apparently according to a poll of people, it was like some 60 or 70% of people associated just the term Comic-Con to San Diego Comic-Con.
They didn't pull me.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously they didn't pull me. I usually do, like, it would be like Denver Con, but I don't know.
But I think they called it, but I think they use the full name Denver Comic-Con, whereas
I just
San
know
Diego
I just,
is just known as Comic-Con,
and Salt Lake City was trying to
I just see the wheels Comic-Con. Turning in Nat's head, and I really just want to hear what's going on in there.
I don't understand how something like this even becomes a conversation.
It's Comic-Con because money.
Agree with San Diego. When you talk Comic-Con and everybody talks about the larger industry as a whole, you're talking about San Diego Comic-Con, the granddaddy of them all.
Yeah.
But you put a city name in front of that, and it's all the other cons throughout the country. So
Denver Comic-Con, Collins Comic-Con, but that's the big thing is Salt Lake City was trying to sell their con without Salt Lake City.
They were trying to market it as Comic-Con.
But I feel like that's a discussion, not a legal battle.
Yeah.
Like, oh, hey, by the way, guys, like don't
well,
do that.
That
put your city in front of it.
It could have been, except Salt Lake City. Except Salt Lake City was like, no, we want to be Comic-Con.
Well,
and
court.
San Diego was
then
like,
okay,
well, we'll have this discussion
in court.
So then
this is Salt Lake's problem. This is Salt Lake refusing to, like, they're just being stupid.
Yeah, San Diego was like, please don't do that. And they were like, no, we're gonna do it.
And then you get sued.
Honestly, Comic-Con is a colloquialism. You know, it's just comic convention.
Yeah.
Or comic book convention. And we just... San Diego Comic-Con really started the use of that term.
Yeah, but it's like how... It's like how Band-Aid is a colloquialism, even though that's a brand.
Exactly.
You know?
Whatever.
All right.
That's weird.
All right, that's weird.
With that
said...
Review time!
Review time! Okay.
All right. Come on, guys.
I'm just going to do a short one because I want to save the good stuff for the 0.5 issue. So I'm just going to quickly reference Champions number 12. Not that we don't talk about Champions enough already on this podcast. Never. It never happens. But in terms of kind of getting you into it, I think this is a interesting one to get into because it's specifically about Cyclops. So you really get a chance to get to know Cyclops better. You get to get into his story. He's kind of been on the team, but also on X-Men Blue. And so he's kind of been playing his team between the two. And I know in X-Men Blue, originally, they talk about him being on the Champion. Yep. Like, oh, what about your other friends? And so this is a good one to see Champion. Because I was worried that Cyclops was going to go off the team.
Right.
Because X-Men Blue, he's there. Why be in Champions, right? And they really did a good job of basically something happens that alters, not alters, it amplifies his personality. And so you get to see every aspect of Scott Summers' personality as it is right now.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so that was a really cool way. And so the Champions team got to see it, all his like fears and anger and everything else, and they got to deal with it through this issue. And it kind of starts off with, and it's not a spoiler, it just starts off with everyone, all the other Champions besides Cyclops are in this group, and they kind of say, we will never talk about this day ever again.
Wow.
So, and they're basically talking about, and then you get to read what happens in that day as it relates to Cyclops and what happens to him.
Yeah.
And at the end, you really feel like he's really part of the team, and he's really, they've made really good friends with him.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's it. That's what I'll say for Champions.
I really like Champions 12. For a very personal reason, was that the two main locations they go to, Atlanta and Boulder, are both my stomping grounds.
I know, I was when very surprised.
Like, yeah, like I grew up in Atlanta and I lived in Boulder for like a year, and that's where my parents, and that's where my mom and grandparents live. And so when they're talking like Atlanta and Boulder, those are two random places. I wonder what the connection is between them. I was like, me.
Pretty much, it's Patrick.
Yeah. So yeah, no, this is Patrick.
Yeah. Well, overall, I thought it was a good issue. Definitely, I feel like it's one you can jump into. You can jump in right at Champions number 12, and you'd be fine.
Yeah.
That's my review. Done.
Awesome.
All right, well, I'm going to go into Dark Knight's Metal number 2.
Looking at this, like, just flipping through it, it's well-deserved with that.
Yeah. I don't know how to talk about Metal. I've actually had to reread this issue a second time. This is dense. Scott Snyder, something might be wrong with him. He's channeling some Grant Morrison stuff.
That's why I didn't read it last night, because I'm like, looking, just flipping through it, I'm like, no, I have to pay attention, otherwise it's not going to work.
I mean, literally, you want to read this with like DC Wikipedia next to you, because nice. He's hitting some major deep cuts in this story. He's referencing stuff that was written prior to his run that really affected the character. Really, he's dealing with Darkseid's killing, quote-unquote, of Batman, where he gets hit with the Omega Sanction and travels through time. Well, that apparently was the beginning of something that they metals being injected into him. I forgot what the term that they use. Oh, actually, might be right here. But they're basically like plating Batman to be a doorway, like a conduit for this other dimension. So he's put through the ringer in this story, and we're on issue 2. Yeah, Batman is, he's the image of death at this point in time. It's crazy. It was super enjoyable. Snyder and Capullo know how to craft something that's just fun to read, but it's dense.
It's got like horror elements to what I've seen.
Horror action. I mean, there's a scene where Batman gets punched through the chest by Superman.
Jeez.
I can spoil that. Go ahead and read it. Try to figure out what the hell happened there. So yeah, this is.
What you're telling me is I'm gonna like feel like I took drugs reading this.
No, you'll more likely want to take drugs afterwards to try to figure out what exactly is happening. This is great. I cannot wait to see where this story goes, but it's tough. It's a tough read. It's gorgeous too. This is definitely
super.
So recommend it.
Absolutely recommend Metal. I can't wait to read. I can't wait to read the tie-ins. I never thought I'd say that, but I want to know more about the Dark Knights themselves.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. Sir Patrick.
Yeah, so I have Marvel's Generations The Iron with Iron Man and Ironheart. This is written by Brian Michael Bendis and with art by Marco Rudy Zyman and... Yeah, sorry. Oh, Marco Rudy, Zyman Kudransky, and Nico Leon. So we got three artists on this one. Sorry if I mispronounce any of your names. I thought I had to mention this just because last issue of the podcast, I was totally ripping apart Generations about how they're all the same, how mediocre they are. And then
I'm
this
wondering
is the,
why you're still reading them.
Yeah, just because I love Ironheart. She's, like, one of my new favorites. Yeah, that's right. I know Kat's giving me, like, weird looks over there. And this totally blew away my expectations. I went in there expecting, like, the same basic format. And firstly, open it up. Art is just beautiful. I'm not a big art person, as you all probably know. But just the style in it is amazing. Mm-hmm. And instead of going into the past... We find Riri Williams in the future, actually. About 80 years in the future.
Well, I'm already kind of happier about this.
we get the kids of the old Avengers, too, just for a little bit. It doesn't really get into that, which I don't think is necessary. And what I really thought was interesting was the solicits for Generations talk about how we get to see your old character, your favorite old characters, in their prime, which for most of these characters has been in the past, apparently. But for Tony Stark, being a futurist, his prime comes when he's at the ripe old age of 126.
Stop it.
And slight spoiler, even though it comes pretty early on, he's the Sorcerer Supreme Earth.
This is badass. And, I'm sorry. Stop.
Yeah, and just like you get some great, great full page shots here of all sorts of stuff. Just flipping through this is amazing, and there's one page where a villain comes in, and there's not even a fight scene. Mm-hmm. He's just like, I got this crazy magic talisman, you better get out of here. And she's like, oh, damn, I'm getting out of here. Morgan Le Fay rides in on a dragon from another dimension, and Tony Stark's like, don't even mess. And she's like, sorry, didn't mean to mess. And I thought this was amazing how... I read this whole thing, and they're just flying through, like, this future utopian world.
Right.
And I was just so intrigued the whole time. And I kept giving... One of the reasons I like this so much and that I was giving the other Generations before is the random-ass time travel that has no meaning. This one still doesn't explain the how, but Tony Stark gives us a reason for the why, if that makes sense. At one point, he is talking about... that he goes back in time at one point and it gives him a perspective on the future and how far technology has brought us. And so going into the future gives Riri a perspective on how far technology will go. And so I really enjoy, even though it doesn't necessarily explain.
So this is not Riri of that time. This is Riri from our present going to the future
however thrust into the future and is having this conversation with old man Tony.
Okay.
And,
he doesn't look that old.
Yeah, he doesn't. I mean,
for 120.
Yeah.
No.
So amazing. I'm resold on Generations after reading this.
I feel like you're just going to get disappointment after this.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah, but if this is the only good one to come out of it, it's worth it.
Well, it could be a good point towards the legacy Iron Man title. Like, that might be... Mm-hmm. If they're searching for Tony Stark, maybe searching in the future is what the story will be.
Mm. Yeah, that is a possibility. Because as a futurist, where else would Tony Stark be?
Right. Where would he go if he had the choice?
Yeah,
exactly.
That's cool.
That is cool. I like it.
I guess I'll have to read that one.
I know, me too.
I stopped, because I collect. I like to collect, so I'm collecting them all. And I, like, get those, and I'm like, well, tape that up.
Yeah, this one you actually have to read, it looks like.
It sounds like it.
All right, last review.
I guess I get the fun one, which is the Harley Quinn 25th Anniversary Special. I can honestly say I adored this, because they have how many different artists on this? I was really happy because I just noticed that, and I should have realized it when I was reading it, that Amanda Connor did one, and then, of course, you've got, like, 14 other artists yes. who did their own, like, There's some art styles where I was like,
Me too.
But at the same time, the stories in them, I'm like, yeah! Like, honestly, it made me so happy. Like, this entire book, what, there's like four stories, I think, all together. Ivy's in three of them, which made me ecstatic.
Me too.
Because I love Ivy's and Harley Quinn's relationship. Like, I remember when the Suicide Squad movie was coming out, and everybody was like, oh, I want to be like Joker and Harley. And I'm like, no, you want to be like Ivy and Harley.
That's right.
That's real love.
A way better relationship.
Yeah, because I know in one of them, like, she makes sure she does something good for her friend, and she doesn't know about it, and she hides it. And I'm like, that's so precious. You love her.
I know.
I was like, Well, the thing is, I think you even get a throwback to her original costume, too,
right,
which
you do.
Is my favorite costume, so.
That whole story felt like it was out of the animated series.
Oh my god, it was so good. I was like sitting here reading it, and of course it's like 12:30 in the morning because I procrastinate. So I'm like, trying not to let, I'm like reading the end of it, I'm like, oh, it's so cute, they're such good friends, and so much more than that. It's just, like all of this is just like, even the last one, like you see an insight to Harley's character in all of these, all of them.
Yeah, you do.
Like the first one, you've got all your comedy. I think the second one is the one about her birthday, which you just see.
Yeah.
Like her relationship with the Joker, and then you see how much Ivy actually cares about her, and then you go to like the third one,
which is Ivy again,
yeah. Because Ivy and Harley Quinn are the best.
Yes, they are.
Like seriously, there may be a tattoo of them on me at some point. Like it's just probably gonna happen anyway. So, and then you see that, and then you see it's another bit more comedy, and you just like see.
Yeah, I like that Swamp Thing showed up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was my favorite of
the
story.
Yeah,
really? My favorite one was the birthday one.
It was the birthday one.
It was my favorite.
My last one's my favorite one. With Robin.
That one?
Yeah, Robin was my favorite.
Yeah, the last one, and then you see even more insight to Harley on the last one.
Being a psychiatrist.
Well, not even just the psychiatrist part. The fact that she still has a heart is the best part. Yeah.
Like even though she rolls her eyes at it when she does it, but she's like, all right.
I guess.
I like the fact that the three of us read this and each had a different favorite.
Yeah.
Right.
And that goes to show you how strong the stories were. It's like each
I just couldn't, the friendship / more than friendship thing between Ivy and Harley always like takes my heart away. And that birthday one was just like, I was just like, so beautiful.
Yeah, the psychiatrist one is my favorite. By far, I connected to that one the most.
Uh-huh.
I guess. It's like every part of Harley, and you get to connect with every part that you think you like the most. And the psychiatrist part has always been my favorite part.
But the
part
first
of her.
One, though, because we haven't really liked the first story, that one's just a straight out funny.
I laughed out loud.
Yeah, it's so good.
The vomit sequence. The, like, can we read just like a quick moment of that?
Yes.
Where is it?
It's like the second, third page. It's not that far in, though. I remember that. Oh, and I found
it. Right here in the...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So Catwoman says, what do you think it was? The chocolate? The pizza? The booze? The bowls of cereal with marshmallows?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Just a circus in a hotel room is all you need to know about the first one.
Well, the best part is, I'd have to say, like, my favorite quote from that one, where is it? It kind of got out of hand.
It did.
You said it got out of hand?
It did. Out of hand.
Like, that was, like, the best part to it. It was just, like, that moment in time where it's like, you think it got out of hand? Hold up. Who is she telling the story to?
I don't know who that is.
I don't know who that character
Red
is.
Red Tool or Tool something is her name.
Yeah.
Oh, the Red Tool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I had no idea who that was.
I had never seen it before either.
He's a very new
Is
character.
It a he or she? I couldn't tell.
I think it's
a he.
I think it's supposed to be a he.
Okay.
He just has, like, very, very defined pecs.
I was going to say that. I kind of look like a boob.
Yeah, they look more like boobs.
So, the thing is I want to mention that, too. It's like, let's make a bet. Whoever nails the most bad guys gets a massage from the loser afterward. Like, naked with oils and low lighting. Is there any other kind?
Yeah.
There's some fourth wall breakage in that one, too.
It is, yeah.
I was just like, oh, it's...
Read it. Just read it.
I honestly didn't think I was going to enjoy it that much, and then I read it, and I'm like, this is great!
Yeah, it was so much fun.
So much fun.
The first one, though, like, the first one's got all your comedy, there's touching moments, there's more to Harley's character. I was just deeper. Like, why can't all of them be like this?
Well, she's running for mayor, so maybe we'll see what happens. Yeah. All right, well, I guess that wraps up issue number 10 for us. Say goodbye, everybody.
Bye.